the panel, which is called Old Media, New Media, Comics Media, and we've assembled a all-star crew of comics media folk. My name is Heidi McDonald. I am the editor-in-chief slash writer of The Beat at www.comicsbeat.com, and also the co-editor of Publishers Weekly's Comics Week. And then we have, if I'm missing any important credits, just jump in. Then we have Rick Marshall from MTV Splash Page, and Caleb Gellner, is that how you say your name?
Yeah, it's cool.
Let's get the truth out there.
Gellner, Gellner. It's all how afraid of Nazis you are.
All right, and from Comics Alliance, and Oscar nominated Comics Alliance. Then we have Ron Richards from iFanboy. Noah Belaski from the Hidden Utilitarian, the ComicsJournal.com, and also the Print World as well, right?
Yeah, I write for the Reader.
For the local paper. Okay. And then Johanna Draper Carlson of Comics Worth Reading. The mystery guest will be revealed. And then next to the mystery guest, we have Lucas Siegel from Newsarama. What's your title there, Lucas?
Site editor.
Site editor. All right. So. Okay. Well, gosh, what do we ever have to talk about, guys?
Comics.
Yeah, comics, sports, whatever. Let's see. All right, I'm going to start with the obvious question about old media, since I said old media, new media, comics media. So some people, Noah used to work in the paper environment.
I mean, sort of.
Yeah.
It's all online as well.
That's right. Oh, here comes Bridget. Here's our, yes, she's racing.
I was in room 353.
Oh.
I think it would be right next door.
No, yeah. It's the other side of the world. And Bridget Alverson, every blog on earth. Bridget, how many blogs do you run?
I have two blogs, Manga Blog and Paperless Comics, about manga and webcomics. I edit the Good Comics for Kids blog. I have a personal blog nobody reads. And then I write for Publishers Weekly, for about six. School Library Journal. Anybody
will
pay me, basically. I'm a freelancer.
Busy Bridget. Anyway, well, my first question actually involved Bridget, but we'll let her catch her breath. So I guess some of our panelists, myself included, Noah and Bridget, have had a past in the paper world, traditional media. Ron, you also? Rick, did you also? Okay. Let's just talk a little bit, throw it out to the panel about how your journalism methods or ethics or writing style or whatever changed as you adapted from print to the web.
Well, I'm not a journalist at all, pretty much. I mean, I write criticism, and so my journalistic ethics don't really exist. in terms of... I mean, I guess I interview people occasionally, but I try to avoid that. In terms of, like, the difference, I mean, I guess the main difference is that you get paid less online.
At all.
If you get paid at all, that's right. So that's a big difference. The Reader, which is the main place that I have a print outlet these days, is far, far and away pays more than anybody else who I write for, and everybody else is pretty much online. And the other difference, I mean, the flip side of that is that you can write about lots of stuff online that there really wouldn't necessarily be an outlet for in print. I just published this thing about a 19th century. I published this sort of essay about Zen and you know how art is innately corrupt, based on this 18th century Japanese Zen drawing on this site called Splice Today, and like where I would publish that in print is really quite unclear. So those are some of the differences for me.
There's also that whole dynamic with the
suddenly first takes so much more precedence than ever did in like the print world. I mean, I can't even imagine the process of having to be first to the information back in the day, where back in the day in the newspaper world, I mean, it was very much just whoever writes the story better, whoever has the most details. Now, very much in the online world, I don't know, one of the things I've always found is that there's so much more emphasis on being first that I think sometimes other things kind of falter.
But what about Lois Lane always trying to get to that?
Well, but there's a doctrine called the hot news doctrine, which is actually legal. To try and protect the validity of information somebody got first, and newspapers are kind of trying to bring that back as a way to compete today. And I think it's a really bad idea, because I think newspapers who are trying to bring it back don't realize that they're getting their information from somewhere else who might try and force it against them as well. But you bring up a good point in terms of, I keep writing for magazines that fold. I mean, I wrote for Comicology, I wrote for Peak. And it's a matter of, do you want to spend a whole lot of time on one piece that might last longer, or do you want to spend less time on more diverse things? And both have their strengths and weaknesses.
So there's nothing really to stop you from... I mean, again, I'm not a journalist, so getting to things first is not something that I mean, my blog is doing a roundtable on Swamp Thing at the moment. The Alan Moore Swamp Thing. So obviously, we weren't first.
Did you take bribes from Swamp Thing?
Maybe. I mean, I would. I mean, he's sort of all-powerful. So
did
that
you
would...
let him pay for lunch? You shouldn't do
that, man. Yeah, right. You'll get an intestinal flora.
I think that the kind of feature writing that you're talking about with more evergreen things, I think that's something that's kind of missing quite sadly right now from a lot of places. And the immediacy of blogs is a great thing in getting information out there, but there's still room for actually talking at length about things.
Yep.
And I think people seem to almost be scared to do that because they think that it's not worth their time, or, you know, you're not getting your bang for your buck out of it, or whatever else.
I think that's right. I mean, my husband, who writes for my site sometimes, likes to write long research pieces, and he gets very discouraged because he doesn't have as much of a following because he isn't posting as frequently, and he doesn't get a lot of feedback in terms of comments. People would rather say, no, you're wrong, and argue about it than say, hey, great piece of work. So there's kind of some negative pressure against doing those lengthier pieces.
Can you guys all hear back there, by the way? So, yeah, okay.
Well, I think that ties into something interesting, which is like with newspapers and print and stuff like that, you don't have the community around. Like, you know, a newspaper prints an article, and the seven angry people with typewriters at home write the angry letter to the editor, and a week later it gets printed, and the feedback cycle is so much shorter. Whereas online, you get that immediate comments, and, you know, specifically with what we do, like, I agree with you, like, I don't consider myself a journalist. You know, what we do in iFanboy is more lifestyle, experience-based, and it's like, here's what's going on, and here's a place for the community to come talk about it, and good or bad, pro or con, and we try to get some in-depth stuff, but with the web and with the internet, you get that short attention span, you know, like, really, you know, like, people want to quickly get the information and then share what they think about it, and it's that conversation that happens as opposed to the reporting of it.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, I was a reporter at a community newspaper for 4 years, and to tell you that I got immediate feedback, I would get calls at 6 a.m. the day the paper came out.
Yikes, I'm sorry.
People would stop me. I would be at the beach, and people would come up to me and go, hey, about that story. And I think what I learned from that is to be very, very conscious of what I write, which I think a lot of bloggers learn the hard way. Spell the names, check the facts you think you know, be careful about offhand references.
No, the best way to get hits is to screw up.
Yes.
Right?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that, so one of the things that I brought with me is that, you know, to blogging from newspapers, is that when everybody's like speculating about something, I pick up the phone and call the people, because I can hear my editor still in the back of my head after all those years going, pick up the damn phone and find out. With regard to Lake, he brutally cut my stories to 1,200 words or less because he said nobody reads more than that. So I had to learn to be extremely economical. The things that I left behind are the nut graph, thank God. And sometimes, in a way, hard news is easier because you have more sources to work for. When you're covering comics, publishing companies are private companies, so they're kind of a closed book, so it's harder to do investigative reporting. You don't have the resources you do when you're covering the government.
Let me Now, Lucas and Caleb, have you worked in print, or are you internet only?
You go first.
my only real print experience was in college, doing the college newspaper. There are definitely things that I took from that to online. And
well, that counts. Come on now, man. J-school.
Yeah, part of it is my love for the feature. I really do. I really do love the feature. It's something that is...
I mean, when you talk about features, like, what are you thinking of precisely?
More magazine style, where...
Like, are you talking about reported features or critical?
More reportive features, definitely, where you're actually looking into different sides of an issue, and, you know, and I'm not going to lie, previews and Q&As are bread and butter. That is what probably 80% of Newsarama's fan base comes to us for. But I think that the Q&A just comes off kind of hollow sometimes. And from writing a newspaper story, like you said, with multiple sources, a Q&A is just part of your sourcing. That's the first step. It's not your piece. So things like that. Otherwise, I think that the basics can carry over and should carry over, and probably don't that often.
Well, there's a whole, anybody can start without knowing anything about it. I mean, I had to explain to another reviewer way back in the day what conflict of interest was and why, if you were going to have a story in issue 2 of a comic, you should mention that when you reviewed issue 1 of that comic. And it just struck me as really obvious, but he didn't know.
Right.
I mean, he was just talking about what he thought was talking about and wasn't thinking about what am I leaving out of this that I need to include.
I think a lot of that comes when you actually have that the newspaper background, when you've actually done that journalism 101, even like that sort of thing. And so many, what I've found in this industry as well as like the movie industry and a lot, because I do a lot of coverage of that area, and so many of the people who are reporting the news are people who are involved in the industry and then left it and then decided, oh, I want to keep writing about this, and so they've never actually sometimes had that newspaper experience. So it's always an interesting group, because those are people that you compete with as someone who does it. If you're spending the time to like check your sources, and I spent a few years working in the New York State Capitol as a government politics reporter there, and if you didn't have like a million sources for anything that you reported, your ass is going to get sued. That's put it bluntly, that's what's going to happen. And carrying that over to the comics and entertainment journalism area, it's weird because there's that push for the first that sometimes supersedes the checking, but you know what? Readers want that first bit, so it's frustrating sometimes.
Because I don't think the consequences don't exist in the comics industry. Yeah. I mean, they don't. I mean, maybe one yeah. blogger or writer who's been sued or who's been. I mean, how does Rich, exactly?
Well, you're not going to get free comics anymore.
Exactly.
that just happened.
Well, yeah, I know. All right, who here has been cut off the comp list at one point? You know, come on.
I haven't ever really gotten
the mutiny on the bounty. You know, when you have to get lost.
You're not supposed to talk about it.
Caleb, what is your background in writing on the web or learning how to write? Or
pretty much, I went to college for journalism, but I was too lazy because I thought I was going to be a rock star, and so I did advertising instead. So I learned how to use Photoshop really well.
Useful.
Yeah, basically. I don't know. I mean, I still got like the journalism training. I was like printing T-shirts and playing shows and getting drunk every night. And then I got an opportunity to write for an alt weekly in Kansas City called The Pitch. It's a Village Voice magazine, I guess. And that kind of all of a sudden, I had like editors who were super old school, especially my music editor. And I was just reviewing like rock shows and like hip hop shows and. I would turn in, 2,000 words and a bunch of photos, and he would just email me back and be like, why? ? And I'd be like, what? What do you mean, why? So I'd be like, okay, this guy's insane, and you'd be like, retype it, and you'd send it, and you'd be like, better, do it better even. Like, and then, you'd send in a third draft, and so Right off the bat, like, my pedigree got, like, really harsh by some unmellow fellows and fellaces. And that was really good for me. It kind of put the fear of God into me a little more. Because it wasn't so much the technique, like, that I was lacking, but more, like, the discipline to, like, really get stuff into gear. So, yeah, I try not to do typos and things, you know.
Well, the point is that someone has to teach you.
Yeah.
You know, and
but the whole point about the web is that they don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute.
Do people feel that that's
readers teach you faster than anybody? I mean, honest to God.
Or not. I mean, you don't even have to learn on the web.
Yeah.
Ever.
But it's like, you know, you're saying, Bridget, you're saying your editor was like, you know, criticizing you. Now that my phone criticizing you. It's like immediately you get, well, I think this is a boring post, or this is terrible, or, you know. So I think what you have to learn in the online is...
What are you doing?
I don't know, I'm angry. Working
media.
Our man left.
All right,
we're going to talk very quietly.
Look at him just going through the board. Oh, that's awesome.
Say what Bridget was describing as the role of her editor, I got on Usenet where I started, and God bless them for that. I learned real quick, if you don't back up your points, they're going to savage you to shreds. So, yeah.
One of the things I learned from my newspaper is to have, first of all, have a very thick skin and not let it bother you, and secondly, don't be an asshole. And I left the newspaper industry 6 years ago, and 3 years ago I started working for the mayor of my city, whom I had covered as a reporter. My paper didn't endorse him. He won by a single vote. I worked side by side with people that I wrote negative stories about, and it's been okay, because I was careful when I was doing my work. I didn't go on vendettas, I didn't do rants. Everything was backed up with three sources. You know, people, I would go to people and say, look, I'm sorry, but I have to write this story, because that's what it is. And I think that it instills in you, it just centers you better. When you're writing about stuff, especially on the net, you don't realize right away that you're writing about real people and that real things are happening and there are consequences to it.
But no matter how professional you are, some of them are going to take it personally.
Sure.
And so that's a two-way relationship. I mean, you have to be professional about it, but you have to hope that they're going to be professional about it as well.
Right.
I mean, when you're writing criticism, it's a little different, though. I mean, you're sort of, I don't know. Well, like, I certainly don't worry about being... You know, like if I really hate something, I don't necessarily feel that I need to be at all diplomatic.
I'm not saying that you have to couch it or cottonmouth it or anything like that. I'm just saying that you can make the most innocuous comment about how the color didn't print right on a page, and someone is going to think that that was their baby, and they're going to hate you for pointing it out.
Yeah. Right, which is all the more reason not to really worry about whether you're going to be getting people angry or not.
Well, why didn't you just say this was your first convention ever?
This is my first convention.
Yes. Down here in the world, you know, there's always that guy on the panel who's like, I write what I want because I don't leave the house.
I mean, it's possible to leave the house without going to conventions.
Yes.
I mean,
Noah, there might be that person who decides to make crank calls to your house one Saturday morning.
Well, that
has happened.
Oh, well, see, that's no good.
You know, there are loonies out there, and you can't, you know, you can do the best job and do a job that you're proud of and that you think you're doing correctly, but there's always going to be flakes.
I was savaged on cable TV by an alderman who didn't like what I had written about him, even though what I had written about him was only half as bad as what I could have written about him. I was appointed to a board in my city, and he went on a half-hour rant. And it was just all, like, this is when I found out that everybody watches cable TV. Because for 2 weeks after that, people came up to me and were like, wow, what a jerk he is. And I felt much better. And that's the other lesson from that, is the person who attacks you is probably a lone wacko.
I think the other thing, I mean, like you said, don't be an asshole, or like Will Wheaton says, don't be a dick. I think the other thing to remember as far as writing about comics is you're writing about comics. Like, it's fun, and they absolutely can be life-changing things, and they can be things that affect people in amazing ways, from getting hope from Superman to experiencing somebody else's life from a slice of life perspective that you're never going to see on your own. But they're comics. It's entertainment. It's something that hopefully you're having some fun with. And I think it scares me when I see people that just don't seem to be having any fun talking about comics.
let me ask a question. Actually, Ron, you had kind of sent around a little bit, because there was a little discussion going around beforehand. About is there too much information about comics out there with Twittering and constant real-time updates of Facebook and everything? Is there too much information? I mean, you know, that goes to the me first. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think in the past, you know, 2 years alone, we've seen the comics media industry change completely because, you know, the days of somebody being first or stuff like that, it just takes one creator posting on Twitter, "Hey, I'm doing this," and he was first, yeah. And so it kind of takes the center away from a site or a media thing, breaking it, and more just about everybody kind of experiencing it at the same time and then reacting to it. I'm always astounded at how big the comic industry is and how small it is, how much information there is by such small amount of people.
And the other thing is, you're now competing with the publishers' websites.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, the first thing, you know, you'll have times when publishers just want to make the announcement themselves.
Which I think
that's fun.
I think that's great. I mean, look at what DC's been doing. DC's been doing a lot more stuff on their blog, and it's less about somebody getting, you know, the story and more about all of us just kind of reacting to it. And at least for us on iFanboy, it's been great because our just community wants a place to talk about it.
Yeah. Right.
If you can't do it first, do it better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Really. I mean, I've had pieces where I thought, oh my God, no one even cares about this. It's been 4 days. I wasn't able to get to it. I do some kind of summary where I try and pull together as much as I can, and people love it.
But that, because it's your point of view. You see, that's what we always say. We tell our writers and stuff like that. Like, it's not a matter of saying, Marvel announced this new Wolverine book. Mm-hmm. Done. It's Marvel announced this new Wolverine book, and this is what I think about it. This is what I think of it. This is my unique point of view that nobody else, my point of view is different than all of your point of views. So, you know, and that's what people...
But I'm also talking about, and it's just like this Wolverine book they did 8 years
right,
ago
exactly,
that maybe
yeah.
people don't, you know,
give
or,
some analysis.
Or it's totally new.
That,
or,
exactly.
It's like, they just announced Pat Lee coming back, Dynamic. I mean, you know, I mean, I got this press release, I'm sure a bunch of you guys did, and it's like, you know, did you know there's another story here? And, which I didn't really have time to do, but the comments did the job admirably. So it really is, on Monday, I actually got to break a story, which was the Marvel going to Hachette. And that was really weird because I had an interview scheduled with the Diamond representative, and while we were talking on the phone, he said to me, "Oh, look, Hachette has a story up. You can run with it." And, I mean, you better believe. I was like, "Oh God!" Yes, you know. And then I get it up on Twitter, and I was like, "Yes, the first time." I mean, that never happens anymore. It was like, you know, that was unbelievable. But so yeah, it's like, you know, once in a while you get the actual news. I mean, how does that? Does that affect the quality of what you're doing?
Yes, rushed coverage is always worse than thoughtful coverage. Yeah.
And there's also just a lot of questions to be had about the entire bartered exclusives thing. Like, I just, it was something very new to me coming out of, you know, going from newspapers into entertainment journalism and that sort of thing, that the standard is a bartered exclusive where it's agreed upon ahead of time. And then there are certain expectations about all this, and I've never quite felt great about it. Despite the fact that it's lifeblood of many sites, I just never felt great about it. It's such a weird area because you don't know where to draw that line about what to say about it or what to do about it. You just throw it up there and say, "Hey, we were here first." You provide some commentary at the risk of, you know, losing future ones. It's a weird area.
It's tough when you become a tool for the company, the publisher, PR's teams to use. I mean, and it's a catch 22 because without that, we're all sunk. You know, so it's, you know.
Well, what's the are you guys running negative reviews in general? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We will.
My only standard as far as the reviews go is that it's a well-written review. Mm-hmm. If if somebody turns in a review and just says, this sucks, I'm not going to run that, you know? But if somebody says, here's why I don't enjoy this art, that's absolutely it. Valid criticism is valid criticism. And do some creators sometimes get upset over them? I'm absolutely sure that they do. But that's still, that's part of the process.
Well, this brings to light one of the biggest differences. You were talking about media changing every 2 years, and it's been that way for the last two decades. But the biggest change I've seen is people actually making a living at this. Because I think what some of y'all are trying to do is very different from what, I don't know about you, but I'm assuming what you and I are trying to do.
Yeah, I'm not making a living.
I have an independent day job, which means at any point I can say, I don't need a publisher, I will go buy whatever book I need myself. And it feels like, I mean, I still want to be responsible, but it feels like that way I don't have to worry about what are they going to think about what I'm saying here.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the, I mean, yeah, I mean, I just, I mean, there's no way I could do the sorts of things I do on my site and have anybody pay me.
There's also different types of sites, too. I
mean, yeah,
types of comic sites that are focused, like, well, you have more independent one. Also, while Newsarama in itself is very, it's very comics, so this is the news of the comics industry. I'm in a weird spot, too, with MTVs, where we also cover, you know, their comics coverage rolled in with movies and TV and sort of more pop culture-y connections with comics. Right. So I'm not as reliant on the publisher, so I can make some calls that maybe, you know, might impinge that future exclusive or be like, ah, you know what, I don't feel like covering that thing, even though it's a big deal to them, and that's causing a problem sometimes. And I realize that's a problem for other sites because you can't do that. I mean, it's part of the...
But, yeah, but to go back to something, I mean, there's people write. I mean, not for... I mean, that's kind of a place where some of the longer writing is. I mean, I don't know if you guys read Joe McCulloch's stuff, but, I mean, he writes really, really long reviews all the time. I mean, you know, 6,000-word reviews or whatever. And, you know, nobody's... I don't think, for the most part... I think he's on Comics now, so... He may be getting
I've
paid.
I've never finished one.
What?
I like his writing, but I don't think I've ever read one of his reviews.
Yeah, they're really long. You know, they can be a slog.
I would like to see Bridget's day. I mean, like, I don't know how you do it anyway.
But the point is that the argument that there isn't space for sort of longer writing. I mean, there isn't. It's hard to get paid for anything. It's hard to get paid for anything on the web.
Look,
but people...
Can I push back on that just a little bit? Because
I'm just kidding. He says it's hard to get paid for anything, and it's not if you're pretty. I'm being an idiot. I'm sorry.
I'm not pretty, though.
Some of us have to do the best we can with what we got. I agree that there's a place for long writing, and I think it's been demonstrated, studies have shown that the web is actually shortening our attention spans and the length of things that we will read. Granted, one of the disadvantages of working without an editor, and I was an editor before I was a reporter, so I was a book editor, so I completely get how this works, is that you tend to fall in love with your own words, and you tend to make things longer than they should be. You go on side trips, you have flowery descriptions. All writers do it. And the editor's job is to cut that out and tighten it, because it really is true that people will only read so much. And I think that there's a real value to that.
Well, and if you're going to write long, use headings.
Okay,
make it
yeah.
easy for me to
yeah.
jump to the next
let's,
section.
Let me start. I'm going to ask one of the... I haven't done a let's go down the road question, but I'm going to do that now. I'm going to start with Lucas, just to kind of, like, who do you write... Who do you write, edit for? Who is your audience?
I'm in a unique position in that I genuinely have multiple audiences. We have the comics fan base that we've built as, you know, from being the first comic website on the net, which these are very loyal people that, you know, you've got that like 40% of the people that are providing 90% of your views. They're people that come to me and they go to CBR and they go wherever else, and they're going to keep on doing that because they're expecting a certain thing. And that certain thing is, like I said earlier, the Q&As and the previews and stuff like that. We also just recently have started a syndication with Yahoo. And in that instance, we're writing for the exact opposite. where we are trying to write for a mainstream audience and trying to explain to a mainstream audience why a comic book or a video game is something that they should give a shit about. And it's an interesting thing. It's a fun... I love writing like that because I'm stretching myself and I'm finding a way to keep both our core fan base entertained and try to get other people into it is great. And some of my writers really are enjoying doing that now too and stretching a little bit like that. So we definitely have those very completely opposite sides of the coin that we're trying to cater to. You know, we don't want to abandon our core fan base just in the hope of having a story at the front page of Yahoo. But it is pretty fun when you see your story on the front page of Yahoo.
Really, for different venues, it's different. For Manga Blog, I'm writing for manga fans. But I try to make it accessible. 5 years ago, I was out of comics for 20 years. 5 years ago, when I started blogging again, I didn't know very much about it. So I kind of write for the me of 5 years ago, you know, make it clear. With Robot Six, I'm writing for the educated comics fan who sort of has a high level, knows what's what. I don't have to explain the simple things to them. So it's nice because it's like I'm talking to them one-on-one, someone who is the same way about comics that I am. But for Graphic Novel Reporter and School Library Journal, I am writing for librarians. So they want certain things in a review. For Publishers Weekly, I'm writing for retailers in the business trade. They want to know other things. So the first thing I always have to do is sort of stop and say, who am I writing for today? What's important to them? And how am I going to couch it? It's a bit of a challenge, actually.
I would say I'm not writing for the typical comics fan in terms of the person who's looking for something like Newsrama or whatever. My journey is I read a ton of superhero comics for a very long time, and then as graphic novels boomed, I followed that, and manga got me excited about things on a purely fun basis again several years ago, and I want to bring all those diverse tastes into one place. I think I'm still one of the sites that tries to cover a little bit of everything without the focus.
Yeah.
And I also try when I'm writing, and this isn't who I'm writing for, but I try to be conscious of them, thinking about the kind of people I work with who might be interested in me mentioning something interesting about comics but don't read them, don't follow them. So I want to explain what I'm talking about. I don't want to use references. You know, I want to put in a little bit of context. I want to put in a little bit of background. I want to make sure I'm not using jargon or if I'm explaining it. So I try to keep that in mind. In part because, you know, if someone Googles something and stumbles across my site, I don't want them to feel lost. I want them to understand the basics of what I'm trying to say about whether it's a good comic or explaining a news story or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm kind of constantly amazed that anybody reads my site at all, actually. So,
well, you got picked up by...
I did. I mean, people were reading it before, and I got picked up by the Comics Journal, which has been helpful in terms of having people read it. But, I mean, I also write for a bunch of different venues, and, you know, depending on... And not always about comics. So, there's some difference. I mean... But really, like, on my blog, I mean, I write about things I'm interested in, well, for the most part. I mean, you try to make some sort of bridge between what you're interested in and what the audience is interested in. I mean, nobody really necessarily wants to read me babble on at length about Kant and Slavoj Žižek. Which I do on another friend's blog, and, you know, nobody reads that. So you try to find some sort of place in between where you can, like, you know, write about gender issues and Swamp Thing, and maybe people will want to read that. But, I mean, this is one of the great things about the web, is that you really can kind of... I mean, the reason I have an audience at all, really, is because of Dirk Deppe, who starred me writing for the Comics Journal. And, you know, I wrote to him on spec, and he picked it up, and then he linked to my blog. So a lot of my initial readers came from that. But, you know, you can write 20, 30 posts about, you know, fetish issues in Wonder Woman. And there are people who will read it. It's great. I mean, I love those old Wondering comics, and I kind of ended up, you know, I didn't know anything about them. This was like a couple years ago, and like
a journey of discovery.
It's they're great. You know, it's like finding any great art. It's like this stuff is really weird and beautiful and exciting, and I was able to, you know, write a ton of stuff about it and have lots of feedback and have people who are interested in it. And, you know, have Gail Simone comment and you know.
Are you in grad school?
No, I'm a grad school dropout.
Okay.
But that's the thing, you know.
You just need to have that approach about I want to explore this intellectually. So I just
yeah. You know, I get enthusiastic about stuff and I write about it, and if I'm lucky, people will read it.
So.
I just write for my friends. I mean that's the honest truth. I mean, we started at Fanboy because me and my partner Josh O'Connor, we had an email list, and we just said, hey, let's just do it on a website because I'm a nerd, and we built a site. And then other people started showing up, and we found out that they had similar tastes, and ultimately it became a great community by people who just like comics. And we're all like, you know, and there's a lot of people on our site who we know by name, by person. We meet at cons, and it's just this great little kind of group of friends, and it's growing and beyond I ever thought it would be. So
friendly,
yeah, very friendly. Yeah, that's it.
And you two were acquired.
We were, yes, we were recently acquired. So. Sold out.
I just want to. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, like I don't think about the audience at all, because obviously I think about the audience a lot. And like, if people don't read what I'm what I'm doing, like if I post something and people don't read it, like I'll start doing something else. So it's not like I'm not paying attention at all. All right, go. I'm sorry.
The Comics Alliance, we just try to keep it radical. I don't know. We kind of like everybody on the team kind of has like their own personality and their own style. So we try to balance these different elements. Like Laura Hudson, my boss at the site, she deserves like all the credit for making that site sparkle, because I tend to sound like a surfer dude when I talk to people about it. Yeah, I know. But she's like really bright, rock and roll, party hard, intellectual, Ivy League superwoman, you know, like she's like crazy smart, and so she's got ideas like bees buzzing in a giant hive in her mind, and she really cares about connecting with the audience, and I do too. I just kind of try to follow her lead because she knows where it's at, but I usually just end up, you know, like, yeah, that's great, let's talk about this and this, and we have some great freelance writers who know how to respond to that, and I make photoshops of Spider-Man, you know, like getting into car crashes or something. And I wear your friggin' seatbelts, kids.
There's no way I can follow
you
that.
You can't. You're done.
Our audience is a weird area. We're kind of like a bridge audience. It's MTV, so, you know, take that for what it is and run with it. But it's also, as I've found, I've been very pleasantly surprised by people have been very welcoming to MTV covering this, because I feel like I have a great bunch of writers who all know about comics and have kind of gotten past that initial hurdle that everyone sort of gave when they're like, oh, MTV's covering comics. I'm sure they're just going to be covering the, you know, Obama comic and, you know, Superman Doomsday again or something like that, you know, where just whatever the most mainstream thing possible is. And I think we've proven that we have some great writers, one and two, and a few in the audience, we have three back there. We got, and this guy here was writing for us for a little while too. So, you know, it's a bridge audience where it's people who may not be interested in the industry moving and shaking stuff, you know, which editor is left which area to go, which book line to go into another book line and things like that. It's more what's going on with Superman in the bigger picture, what's going on with Spider-Man. And it's a lot like what Lucas was saying too. It's people who want to enjoy comics, want to have fun. And so that's why it's also been able to kind of branch out of comics into movies. And it was actually started as a more movie-focused blog, comic book movies. And as the site's grown, we've actually been able to do a lot more comics-focused coverage, which has been great because I can introduce these people now to people who might not have a movie project in the works, but there are some great writers, and you can kind of do that. And as you get feedback from that, which readers have been great responding to that and showing that
person doesn't need to have an optioned comic to actually be an interesting subject matter. So that's been great. But yeah, we're pretty much like a bridge audience. We're not as hardcore as like, you know, maybe like the news around the readers, because they want, you know, every piece of news. They want to know everything that's happening in the industry and such. I thank God I don't have to cover that. I'm so happy for that.
If I don't cover at least 20 panels at every convention, I mean,
that's it. Yeah.
And that's the case. 20 panels, we're doing, I think, something like 40 or 50 video interviews.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Like, that's the thing. You guys go, you cover, like, drama and CBR, I mean, it's every little small thing, and that's, and people are hungry for that. You got your readers respond, and with mine, it's been very much readers who just might not want to know about some of that stuff, but they kind of want to know, like, the bigger things. We kind of have some fun with stuff and do some sort of feature listy type things that are fun. But, you know, they're starting to care about, like, the little stuff, and I thank so much for that, because I don't want to be covering these movies.
Sounds a lot like our games coverage. When we relaunched about almost 2 years ago now and opened up separate sections for movies, TV, and games, first off, that instant feedback we were all talking about was very interesting. But we actually post more comic stories now than we ever have in the history of the site, and then also post stuff about those other things. But it was kind of the same deal where we started off pretty much only talking about comic book video games, and then we kind of just, that's one where it's more like you were saying about iFanboy, it's more of that kind of atmosphere where I'm pretty much writing about games that if I go to a game demo and I play it and I enjoy it and I'm going to go talk to my friends about it, that's pretty much what I write up for the site too, and that can definitely be fun, it can be freeing.
Yeah, exactly. I launched two spin-off sites within the last couple of years, and at first it was manga worth reading so that no one else got it because it seemed like an obvious takeoff, and then DVDs worth watching, which is in part to get some free DVDs. Sell out. But then I realized that, you know...
Does it work?
Yeah, actually. No, I had people who said, we would be interested in sending you this movie because we would like to know what you said about it, but we can't show the Comics Worth Reading URL to our studio bosses because they'll say, why is this romance on a Comics Worth Reading site? And I said, okay, fine, I'll have DVDs worth watching and we'll go forward from there. But the thing is that it frees me up to keep stay excited about the core area by not having to focus on that all the time and just say, here's something else that sort of fits in with the site, and if you're interested in this, you might also be interested in that.
So it's also nice, if you want to talk about something that has nothing to do with comics, you can make up a reason that it has something to do with comics. We like to give Chris Sims money to go try the KFC Double Down so we'll make up something about it the next day that's shatters your mind.
See, that's why I keep coming up with different blogs. I have different stuff I want to write about. So I'm like, oh, nobody's done a blog about that yet. I'll do that. I know I've got those wrong.
Let's open up some questions out there. Does anybody have any questions? All right. We'll start with the front row and then.
I'd like to hear the answer to your own question. What is the needs audience?
I guess I write for. When I first started, I wrote for myself. And because I hadn't been blogging in that way before, and it made me, you know, I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed the audience. But myself being a person who wanted to know what the inside scoop maybe was, or a little bit of the behind the scenes, I didn't want, although I do run a lot of press releases now because I don't have time, but I wanted to know a little bit more of like, oh, this is important because, so I guess I write for, I think, the educated inside, people who want to know inside baseball. I think it's more, you know, it wouldn't be on the front page of Yahoo. It's really more something that was a little bit more like, oh, did you know that, you know, I like a lot of business wonky stories too, like, did you know that you know, Target partnered with, you know, iFanboy? I mean, I don't know, I like that kind of stuff because...
Score!
Yeah. from you know, even working at the mayor's office, it's like, you know, follow the money is always the story.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in every comics and everywhere, it's always follow the money. So I think it's more the I try to anyway. But then, you know, when I was doing it for myself, I wrote about Clive Owen and Gerard Butler and those and Salma Hayek, and like those became incredibly, like, of course, the highest trafficked you know, post ever. I thought, because anytime you post, you know, hot people, it soars. So, yeah, I mean, that's like what, I mean, all of us, if we were just going for traffic metrics, we just post nothing but pictures of hot people, like, you know, or whatever.
I love when I get Aspen images.
do you know what one of my top 10 like ever posts was for a while? The Bella Sarah collectible card game that featured horses for girls.
Nice.
Because no one wrote about it. And apparently I was
horses for girls.
Yeah. I know, but like apparently I was on the front page of Google when people were looking for card codes they could download. So it was useless traffic, but you know, there it
traffic
is.
Traffic nonetheless. Yeah.
It's the surprising posts that always get me. You know, you throw something out there, and suddenly people just really wanted to talk about it or whatever.
Our highest traffic post is top 10 naked superheroes.
Well, yeah.
we hit them all right there.
Yeah,
top 10 naked.
Did you have a question back?
That wasn't something we syndicated.
No, go on. So.
Has there been any concessions made to try and not spoil things for, you know, the guy who gets home at 6 o'clock and manages to read his comic, but at work is checking his email?
I created Spoiled at one point. I handed it off, and it's gone through like 3 or 4 people since then. But it was basically a blog where we posted the plot points of every mainstream comic that week. And it was to make a point, which is that if it's a good story, it doesn't matter. And if a company is going to say, you need to buy all these 18 books this week, and I don't want to buy 18 books this week, I want to buy the 6 I'm going to enjoy, then I can find out what happens in the rest of them so I can understand the overall story as it moved towards that. So it was a political point. And that's why I did it, and it sapped all my energy, and I did nothing else.
On that note, Johanna, shameless plug, we run these awesome, fun columns called Damn Dirty Blank that recap all of the events. We literally read all 119 Secret Invasion lines. And we just did the finish the same thing for Blackest Night. And
cool.
See, I think
and we're getting away from his point, which I was trying to say. There are people who care about that, and it's unfair not to label it, and it's unfair to ruin the surprise for them. But at the same time, sometimes there's so much chasing of what happens next that a lot of other stuff is overlooked about what makes a good story.
Yeah, like the Spider-Man unmasking wasn't the story. I mean, like Captain America dying was another one. Like, you know, that was all over the news that morning.
Right.
It was the story of how he died and what happened afterwards. You know, like I don't know. I've been on a rant on a tear saying that there's no such thing as a surprise anymore. Like with the Darth Vader's Luke's father is never going to happen again because of the nature of what we did.
I think part of that is because there is so much going back to. I mean, with all the Twitter and the Facebook and the blogs and the websites and the this and the that. I mean, you can just immerse yourself in everything and find out every single thing about everything ever in the history of the world in 10 minutes, and it's very overwhelming.
I mean, not that you should do this, but you could just not read the blogs.
Yes.
Also, I don't know if the blogs are really to blame, and then some of the sites that are out there are to blame for it. More often than not, a lot of these things that are spoiled in like the mainstream press are offered to the sites, and a lot of times publishers will offer this to sites that outlets that might not know any better. I mean, these are a lot of times I'm pretty sure the Spider-Man unmasking and things like that, these are offered to sites and outlets that aren't extremely comic savvy, aren't really conscious to spoilers a lot of the time. So they're going to run this stuff because they're told this is a big scoop. You know, the publishers will look at like getting on the front page of like, you know, the New York Daily News or something like that, and they'll be like, oh my God, we'll give you anything if we can get on the front page of New York Daily News. So we will give you this major plot point on the front page. And New York Daily News is like, oh, that's a scoop, we'll run with it. So
I guess we're audience questions. Glenn, you had your hand up, but then behind you've had your hand up for a long time. So Glenn?
Just the thing with spoilers, one of the things that we found on our site is that more people are reading web comics as compared to print comics just because you can't find out what's going on in a web comic 6 months in advance of the Diamond catalog. So you're getting a lot of people who are actually starting to read web comics just because they want to be surprised for a change.
Yeah, good.
So. You had a question in the back?
Yeah, I used to seriously people I would consider actual journalists would take what we said in these circumstances. And what is the threshold for blogging as opposed to actually participating in the sort of serious journalism that you guys consider yourself?
Blogging is a technique. Blogging is a type of software.
I
want to make that point because I think people get lost in it. And I think they make assumptions that it's a blog, therefore it's talking about cats or your lunch or, you know, and I think it's like any tool, it's what you do with it.
But surely there's a threshold at which you're not a serious journalist and you're just somebody screwing around on the internet.
Well, the only time I've heard anybody actually care is when they're trying to duck responsibility. Oh, I'm not a real journalist, so that doesn't apply to me.
Well, I think there are also a lot of people who are bloggers out there. I think there are also a lot of bloggers out there who do bring down blogging. They think that just because they have a site and an outlet can run anything they want to run, and then get mad when they're not considered serious journalists by studios or
Rich Johnson
or publishers or things like that. And so, you know, there is this weird, like, well, which do you want to be? And so yeah. There is very much a weird balance. But unfortunately, like, until everybody starts playing the game better, there's always going to be that, oh, well, if you're blogging, you're not a real journalist, and there's always going to be that argument. But there needs to be some. I would love to there be more people watching out. In most part, it's readers that actually make that judgment. I mean, readers have to call out sites who aren't doing their due diligence and aren't doing those things. They have to call them out for not being legitimate journalists. Well, more often not.
In my day job, I actually my day job, I'm a freelance writer. I write books for high school libraries and libraries audiences. That's what I do. And I mean, for that, I'm writing for librarians, and you know, I have to get everything sourced. And you know, for them, there's a real issue about not accepting bloggers. Like, you know, they don't necessarily want me to get articles that are on blogs because they feel they're not, you know, unless it's through a mainstream outlet or something. So I think that there is actually, I mean, there, like, people notice and people, like, definitely think about it depending on sort of like what the outlet is or who they are or what the purpose is. I mean, for myself, you know, a lot of times some of the best reporting or stuff, I mean, I read Andrew Sullivan all the time, right? I mean, who had some of the best reporting on the revolution in Iran or the protests in Iran. And you know, a lot of really good news sources. My wife is actually really into fashion blogs where, you know, they have, and some of the best fashion news is from bloggers who are like 13 years old. So I think, I mean, it's true. One of them, Tavi, I think her name is a really well-known fashion blogger. I don't know. No, I was just.
Well, and
so I think it, I think there is kind of a struggle about, like, how seriously blogs should be taken, how authoritative they should be, which, I mean, on the one hand, there are a lot of blogs that aren't, you know, obviously people can just say whatever they want. On the other hand, one of the things about, I mean, often blogs do a lot better than mainstream media in a lot of venues.
But, you know, look at Johanna. I mean, you know, she just said, you know, oh, I want to review DVDs and you've got free DVDs. But, I mean, you got it because your level of professionalism was readily apparent, okay? And, I mean, I think that's really, I think some of it's in the eye of the, like, I mean, when there's someone who's just blogging about the gentleman or gentlelady blogger, you know, who you can just tell that there is a lot more log rolling going on.
I had a friend who wanted to know, you know, I invited her to share a movie viewing with me, and she wanted to know how I got free DVDs. And I said, do this for a year. Write about the stuff you want to cover, and then maybe you can start asking for stuff. But you need to show you've got a track record.
And, you know, the hourly wage, can I just say, is not that good. If you think about, you know, to get a free graphic novel, which is worth about $15, I'll put 3 hours worth of work into reading it and reviewing it and editing my review and posting it and finding the pictures and everything. I mean, I'd be better off working at McDonald's than taking the money and buying comics and comics.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to pick up on something Rick said, which was, you know, when it comes down to it, are you going to compare yourself to the bottom feeders, or are you going to compare yourself to, I want to achieve better things? Because there are always going to be people out there who are doing a cruddy job, and they're doing it for the wrong reasons, to get free stuff or whatever. And I actually tried to start an online guild many years ago where I thought people could all get together in a secret group and try and make each other... long time ago.
Secret.
I get to be the cleric.
Illuminati. The point was to make it closed so that we could talk about these kind of issues without people using it against us or sure. whatever. And the fact is the people that wanted to participate weren't the ones that needed the help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, so. it's always that, and I completely agree. Like, you have to, there's always going to be that lower level, but like I was saying, I mean, it's really up to readers to call that out, and you have to call out people who aren't living up to what should be legitimate journalism. If you're reading someone's site that takes themselves as a legitimate journalist and presents themselves as legitimate journalists, you need to call them out when they're not being that, and you need to call them out very loudly and you know, in numbers and that sort of thing, because that's the only way they'll learn. That's the only way publishers and studios will stop seeing them as legitimate journalists as well.
I mean, or the government will get involved.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, it's like, you know, worth pointing out again that, I mean, when you're talking about comics... I mean, you're talking about comics. I mean...
But I reject that attitude.
Yeah.
Why?
because I have heard so many people go, it's just comics, as a way to say, you should stop thinking about them. And I'm like, no, yeah, I like no. thinking about them. I like thinking about them,
but I mean, when you're saying... I mean, you're talking about, like, you know... I mean, I just, like...
They're
I don't
a little
know.
Lower than Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans is fine. I just, like...
Many of us
like,
are making our living off of them. So, I mean, they're not just comics.
Yeah.
A lot of us.
Yeah. And that's definitely not what I meant when I said that. I definitely don't mean it as a it's just comics thing. I say it more as, like... I don't think that any of us are writing about comics or talking about comics or whatever because it's the only job that we can find. It's because we do enjoy it, and that's more my thing, is just kind of remembering sometimes that, hey, I get to talk about what I enjoy, and people listen.
I guess my point is just that when you're, I mean, there's a lot of, for journalists, for bloggers, I mean, there's so many people. I mean, the thing about the sort of new media era that we are in is that the barriers for entry are really, really low.
Right.
So anybody can get online and write. And there's, when you're trying to make a living at it, or you're trying to even just have some sort of profile with it, there's a certain desire to make sure that you're separated, that everybody knows that you're not like those people who just got online, you know, yesterday, and are, you know, just use that blogging software, and they're not really good enough. And, you know, I mean, like, on the one hand, you know, if there's a level of professionalism and you're trying to be a journalist and you're making money at it,
I
understand that. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, like, one of the cool things about it is that anybody can just get online and start writing, and they're in the conversation.
But everybody on this panel has been empowered by higher authority in some way.
God.
Whether it's AOL or MTV.
And who's my higher authority?
Yes. Well, Joanna. All right, we have time for one more question, and then it's dinner. So anyway, yes.
Question with the with social media getting more and more prevalent, everyone chiming in their two cents. How do you go further to promote, you know, the clicks and get the attention towards what you're writing on an ever crowded marketplace? Do you find yourself being your
Many of us have a huge first mover advantage. It's not the way it was when we started out, or the site started out, or whatever. And in an ever crowded marketplace, it is harder and harder to distinguish yourself. The best thing you can do is do a great job.
Yeah.
Or make mistakes.
I count myself really, really lucky that I basically inherited this site that had been around for a decade and a half and had this fan base already. But I pimp the hell out of myself on Twitter, and I post links on Facebook, and now, you know, doing syndication, it's another form of that same kind of thing, really. Instead, it's us going to Yahoo editors and saying, hey, look at what we wrote. Do you like it? Yeah. Validate me.
At Comics Alliance, pimping is part of the job description. I actually, the site was basically like not doing anything a year ago. And one of the things that Laura learned and then now is kind of passed on to me a bit is that it's just part of the site. You know, we got to have the double down on there once in a while, you know, to get people to read our think pieces. And, you know, like, the best way of responding to that is by having your look at me should be awesome. Like, just be like, yeah, look, this can still be like an attention grabber, but it can be funny and occasionally thoughtful, and sometimes even just regular old-fashioned journalism type of stuff. But, you know, like, if you can get somebody to come read your think pieces by showing them...
Eating a crappy burger?
Yeah, being a pervert and making photoshops of, you know, nonsense going down. There are worse things you could do.
But that's...
You could shiv a guy in the park, and we could mug some dude.
and then tell him to read your blog.
But that's more about the content. I mean, like the role of social media. I mean, the way we approach it is that it's just an extension of the site. It's like, listen, there are people on Twitter, there are people on Facebook, and this is just another way to engage with them. And so, like, we don't, you know, like, there are other sites or other outlets, not just the comics, but media, who just post links to Twitter, and it's just like, you know, a feed and stuff like that. We inject our personalities into it. We try to have a conversation there because it's where people are, and then we also say, hey, and check this out, come over here, check out this link. And, I mean, Twitter's been one of our best things. I mean, like, I'm very proud of the fact that we're one of the most influential comics media sites on Twitter. I mean, like, there are other sites that validate this stuff and stuff like that, and it's cool because we're engaging people there and not talking down to them or just using them for their links, you know? So.
I think he brought up a great point here, too, is that using social media and such is great, and I think, you know, you're getting on Twitter's great, but not making an RSS feed of just your links. And that's one thing it is set up to. We have the MTV feed that does actually like feed our links on there, but I'm usually on there. I'm on there communicating with people and talking and sort of adding some context to things.
Just that's be careful with TweetDeck because you accidentally tweet something from your professional account that you may have to go on the first.
I actually have them separated.
We have a weak link in our team who constantly is just like...
And then you feel really, really stupid.
Spider-Man took off his mask.
I have that with my phone because sometimes, like, my Twitter's going to my phone, and they're direct, and I send it back, and I'm just like, okay, I'll meet you at blah, blah, blah.
I love missed DMs. It's the best thing, you know, that was meant to be a DM. It's like, no, I'll call you later. Please, don't be mad. Like, that wasn't meant for everybody.
That's one of the iFanboy feed.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things I actually struggle with now is the reason I don't have a splash page Facebook page at the moment is because I'm still trying to figure out exactly how best to do that without it being one of those RSS feed type vibes. I don't want to have something like that because I just don't feel like that works and communicates with people well. But then it's also, you know, do I have enough time to actually go on there and be as involved? Because Facebook takes another level of involvement. And each social media, if you're investing yourself in all of these, then when does it start affecting the actual content you're putting out? If you're spending all of your time putting context into all the social media, you know, when do you have time to write anything? And so I'm trying to figure out the best balance there.
Even Twitter. I mean, I think Twitter is definitely some way that over the past couple of years people have been using, but now even Twitter is becoming cluttered because now everybody has a Twitter. You know, now it's going to be Foursquare, and it'll be like, oh, we're all in the same room together. Isn't that a great way to socially connect?
Wow.
We got it down to 140 characters, but, you know, there's got to be, like, the next little... like semaphore of promoting yourself, because I think even Twitter's become cluttered.
It's too long. I don't have time to read those whole. I never finish a tweet anymore.